Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
And thank goodness that is over and done with. That was actually a little bit painful. I don't know who chose that previous song, but we're going to apologize on their behalf. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Auto Central. It is your weekly motoring show, proudly brought to you by autotrader.co.za. 1 to 2 p.m. every Wednesday here on Cliff Central. Please don't forget to join in on the conversation. You can contact us and chat with us on Twitter at AutoTraderSA. Don't forget to use the hashtag AutoCentral. And we can see if we can chat to you during the course of the show, but we're usually a little tied up and we get into some heated debates here, so we can't always get that
we'll
right.
We'll try and take them.
We're going to see what we can do. If not, we've got people monitoring, so they'll alert us to it. And of course, you can also get in contact with myself at Chad Lookoff on Twitter, and then of course my co-host
at George Minnie.
At George Minnie, yeah, George Minnie, welcome. How are you doing?
Yeah, good and you?
Yeah, all good. You have a good weekend?
I had a good weekend indeed, yep. Thankful for the rain. I think it's a good thing. You know what, we as human beings, we complain too much. We complain when it's hot, we complain when it rains, we're never freaking happy.
No, we never.
You know, I'm happy that the rain is here.
No, it was good. I think we can hold a whole show and a whole discussion just around the problems with South African drivers as soon as a cloud appears in the sky.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's a problem with South African drivers when a cloud appears in the sky. I think the robots notice the cloud appearing in the sky and then they stop working.
That's part of the problem. But then you can sit there and some of your journeys to and from work or wherever you're going just becomes an absolute chaotic nightmare. And you sit there and you say, it's not a problem. We had a little bit of rain. There's probably a traffic light out. And you drive the whole route and you're like, but there wasn't a traffic light out. Mm. Who left their brain in their handbag?
Well, some people get hit with a stupid stick when it rains.
It's panic stations and just complete airheadedness all around the board. And we're joined in studio today by two good friends. And, we've known each other for many years. And the owners of XS Promotions, Jim McFarlane and Mikey Skelton. Welcome, guys. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks for having us, Jan.
And well, there we go. And you can also just chat to them if you want to get in on their one. What are you guys' handles here? We've got it here somewhere.
Handle?
Yeah, Twitter.
Oh. Mike has that.
No, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at mails. I've got all the paperwork here and I'm sitting. Duncan, I think this is yours.
I know there's Mike's on Twitter, but Jim doesn't do Twitter too
much. I'm not a twit.
Yeah, you're not heavy on the Twitter side of things. So where was it? It was here. Oh, okay, you're just playing at Mikey Skelton.
That's it, mate.
At Mikey Skelton. If you want to XS Promotions, xspromotions.co.za, and at Super Drift Series, and that's possibly the little catchphrase there that's going to give you a bit of an inkling as to what a lot of the discussion I think today is going to be around is your guys' big baby. Now, of course, who's XS Promotions, guys?
XS Promotions is an event and sports management company we started about 15 years ago. And we started off pretty small. We looked at doing freestyle motocross. We were freestyle motocross enthusiasts, and we decided to try and take on that sport. And it just developed into other extreme sports like skateboarding, BMX, wakeboarding. Mm-hmm. And it evolved to the four-wheel side of things, which is drifting, which we actually, it was a funny story. When we became service providers for ESPN, for X Games, for freestyle motocross.
Yeah.
So we were invited to go to the X Games in Los Angeles. And we met with a whole bunch of guys. We knew some of the athletes. We knew some of the promoters. And Apple, one of the commentators, we were watching rally at the time in the stadium in X Games. And we said, this is amazing. We want to maybe look at doing this for the future, go from two wheels to four wheels. And he said, nah, come with me to Vegas tomorrow and I'll show you another sport. So obviously he said the magic word, which is Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
And we were on the plane the following morning, went through to Vegas. That night we saw this incredible sport on the streets of Vegas. It wasn't on the street, it was in the parking lot of Vegas. And we fell in love with it straight away. Came back, bought two cars, and those two cars we still have today. And it's, we haven't looked back. That's
one and a half car.
Well, yeah, this months of it.
That's rude.
Mikey, why one and a half cars?
do you want the short or the long story?
Knock, knock, who's there?
Yeah, there we go.
Knock, pretty knock. Much knock, knock, who's there?
engine gone.
Fifth cylinder.
Yeah, fifth cylinder, Conrad number 5.
Well, I've known Jim and Mike for a long time.
Yeah.
We've known each other for a long time, and I've never actually heard your story.
Okay.
Which is actually sad for
me. Very few people know it. I mean, yeah. I do know it. I've heard it before, and I know that you guys were, you know, supporters and media partners, basically agents almost, mm-hmm. for X Games in
Correct. We
Africa?
We helped.
Was it Africa as a whole?
We were. We had the rights to do X Games in South Africa, but the financial contribution for it was just frightening. And I still shiver at the thought today. But we were service providers for X Games in Dubai, Shanghai. We did Dubai, I think, 3 years in a row. And then we carried on with Mountain Dew, which is our big partner overseas. In fact, we might be going to Oman a little later next month. And we just became service providers for those big companies. We've been to Pakistan, we've been to Dubai, Abu mm-hmm. Dhabi, three or four cities in Saudi Arabia doing freestyle motocross. We've been to a couple of African states and countries. The freestyle motocross was pretty much our starting point mm-hmm. and platform. But once we got onto the four-wheel side of things, that Chad, the sport doesn't just bite you in the arse. That's what most sport. I love fishing and it bites. This is the kind of sport that bites you in the jugular.
It goes in for the kill.
And doesn't let go.
Yeah.
So we started with a cause. We went over to West Bank Raceway at the time, met a couple of guys, went over to Rock Raceway, and there was a small, you know, type of following about it. Met some incredible guys, Jonathan Redman. Got them to teach us a little bit, and it spiraled. It got out of control. We just, it's been a fantastic ride.
It's been a circus since.
That's exactly what we've become, is a bit of a circus.
A traveling circus.
When we go to Superdrift, you know, we take about 20, 30 crew members.
Mm.
You know, there's judges and scrutineers and clerks of the courses, and, you know, there's everything that has to put a huge event together we carry with us. So we are a bit of a turnkey solution. We don't hire in province or in the different cities. We take our crew.
Yeah.
We like that traveling circus. And, you know, with the circus, you get the clowns, like Mike. And you get the performers, and you get the lion tamers, and you get everything that comes with a circus. And that's the beauty about drifting.
So you guys organize the entire drift series around the country every year. How does that work?
So basically, we are, like Jim said, a traveling circus. We've got an 8-stop series, which is a national footprint-based series in and around South Africa. So we are visiting places like in Gauteng Red Star Raceway. We move on to the Rock Raceway in July. We get down to Cape Town, our next event in April. We also go down to the South Coast, down in Natal, Port Shepstone, where Desi Raceway has become a fond place for us to drift.
And drifting itself, I mean, what type of following does drifting have? Because, I mean, besides knowing you guys and, you know, you're actually teaching myself and Chad how to drift, the only other kind of drifting that I've seen is the one in the movie, Tokyo Drift. So what kind of following has drifting got?
So I think the movie obviously put drifting on the map in terms of a world, in terms of world focus, you know. So it's gained real popularity. I think it's 25 years old in Japan, so it's not like it hasn't been around.
Is that where it started? Japan.
Yeah, Japan.
Okay,
yeah.
25
not,
years ago.
Not Brakpan, as many think.
But it came to Brakpan after.
But Brakpan like to think they started. There's a common fight.
So
common misconception, yes, that it started there.
There's always been two factions of drifting: the street drifters, and then the guys who take it a little bit more seriously and compete in a national program like ours.
So I've never seen a street drifter in real life. You know,
you're looking at
meet them. So I think we started off in the streets very slowly, and then you know, with time, you just take more responsibility for your actions. So we took it to the racetrack, and that's the best place to drift at the moment.
I think it's the same as superbikes. You know, we also come from that superbike. When we were doing freestyle motocross, we also had a huge superbike division where we would teach people exactly like we do for the drifting. But the thing with superbikes, once you get on the roads and you then get onto a track and you realize how exhilarating, how safe a track is in comparison to putting your life on the line, daddy, on a bike on the roads. You know, that's it was an easy evolution. Stay to the track. It's the better option. It's the better way to go. You can hone your skills. You can get better. And drifting skills for me as a driver, and I also do a lot of stunt driving, a lot of circuit racing. And I can say to you, my circuit racing and my stunt driving, I can't believe the evolution that I got.
In really?
And
because of drifting?
Yeah, the drifting. Being able to utilize that full steering wheel, feeling the car. Have you ever watched the movie The Rush? It's with it's about James.
Nicky Lauda and
James Hunt and Nicky Lauda, and one of the most amazing scenes for me is not the racing scenes, is where he goes to a party and he's a bit antisocial, so he doesn't want to go to the party for sponsors, and he meets this girl running out the house saying she's out of here, and he says, well, can you get a lift? And he jumps in the car with her, and literally the next scene is him saying, well, listen, your car's not sounding so good, your radiator's about to blow, you got your right hub's gonna, and he gives her a whole long list, and she says, that's impossible in a French accent. I've just had the car serviced. The very next scene is them broken on the side of the road. And she turns to him and she says, how do you know? And he says, well, athletes have been blessed with big muscles, big legs, big arms. God blessed him with a great butt. Now, as a racing driver, that means so much.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's all about feeling what the car's doing and what the car's reacting to literally in your butt.
Yeah.
You're sitting down at the most pivotal point where you're sliding around or feeling the car, and you can feel everything from the slightest little twinge in the motor to your suspension that has taken a bit of a knock to, and you start becoming so in tune. Now, drifting amplifies that. It really amplifies everything. You get to feel. I mean, we were chatting the other day. My motor was down on 10 kilowatts. Most people can't feel that. I came back and said, my car's not feeling so great. We stopped the car, pulled the engine out, and we saw that the crank was cracked. So it's those little things that really start you start feeling it. And the drifting's enabled myself to do a little bit more, and you know, I can push the car just that bit further in a stunt, or I can, and that's what I love about drifting.
I mean, from a drifting point of view, you know, normal circuit racing, you're trying to get around the circuit as quickly as possible. That's the point of circuit racing.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's actually rewind this, because we're going out here, and many of our listeners possibly don't even know what the term is. They may not even have seen the video, you know, the film in that. So this is a very strange term for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, circuit racing, you're trying to get around the track as fast as you possibly can, trying to make the best lap times, trying to beat the other people on the track. Now, I mean, I know just from my experience is drifting isn't the most efficient way to get around a track.
Definitely
it's probably the slowest way. I mean, I know when I used to do quite a bit of karting, you know, as soon as your kart starts sliding, you're losing efficiency. You're not going to get around the track as fast as possible. So then what is the point of drifting?
So it's a very good question. Okay, the point is to outdrive, you know, outwit and outplay, kind of survivor style. So we don't have we're not considered a race as such. We're pretty much the idols of motorsports codes in South Africa. So we've got a panel of 3-4 judges who judge us around 3-4 corners of a race circuit. So we don't even occupy the whole race circuit on a day and race around the circuit from start to checkered flag. We've got 3-4 corners. The guys who are competing and being judged on different criteria.
So it's a skill-based sport rather than time-based, trying to get around the track
absolutely.
As fast as
you can. Hack that steering wheel in the circuit and get a good time.
Yeah.
But getting a consistently good time is exceptionally difficult.
Yeah.
But if you get the certain things right, you can get a good lap time. Whereas drifting, man, it's a different skill set. You're being judged. And you're being compared to another driver. And this is what's so amazing. When you go and do tandems, two cars on track at the same time, you get one. Each driver gets a chance to lead and to chase. So in essence, there's always two runs in drifting, and the first driver that's leading. So if you're the person that's leading, you have to run 100% of the line that the judges would like.
What does constitute 100%? I mean, what are some of the aspects that you're looking for?
Exactly. So
from the drivers, what are you?
It's broken down.
What are you judging them on?
It's broken down into four facets, actually. The first one is angle, because it's drifting. You want to see as much angle that the driver can get out of the car throughout the corner.
So perpendicular is perfect.
Magnificent.
And reverse perpendicular is better than magnificent.
It's unbelievable. So angle is an important part. I'm keeping the angle. You don't want to have an angle and suddenly having to wiggle or straight line and drive and then throw it again into an angle. You want to have that consistent angle. You then have what's known as line. So in other words, on a racetrack or on a street, you know, they want to see you get close to the inside curb and possibly hitting what's known as a clipping point. Well, you don't want to hit, you want to brush up, get as close to the clipping point as possible.
I mean, those cars are going past that clipping point so fast. How the hell do the judges kind of tell between one and the other?
They have a whole bunch of things at their disposal. They have replay from TV, they have spotters. They have a whole bunch of utensils that they can use to make the best call.
So pretty much like other sports. That's, I mean, like it sports. Evolves, and eventually you'll get electronics doing it for you. Or aren't you there yet?
We try not to go to electronics yet. Okay. Yeah.
I think the beauty of drifting there is always that personal subjective element. So not to say if you drop your wallet in front of a judge he's going to love you. It's more a case of, can you impress that judge? And he kind of will in his own way be impressed by what you're throwing down on the track.
Which is the art of the sport.
But again, that's the criteria. You have to stick to the criteria that you were explaining, which was angle.
One of them is style, and that's the one that's always questionable with judges, right?
That's a very personal thing. I mean, that's something that doesn't, what looks good for me may not necessarily look good to George. You know, he may like blue and I may like red.
That's what I think sounds like to me what takes motorsport and drifting to another level and outside of the normal track, you know, racing, because... Is there style in track racing? No, there's only speed.
No, it's something that can't be quantified by a figure.
Yeah, you know,
that's why it can't be quantified by electronics.
Exactly, exactly. So there's a kind of art to what you do.
Correct. You've hit the nail on the head. Yeah. It is the art of going sideways.
Yeah.
And that art is being compared, like any piece of good art, by another piece of art, which is the driver next to you or beside you or behind you, trying to copy you. So the driver that's leading, he has to run the perfect run.
Yeah.
And the driver behind has to try and mimic, copy and mirror that front driver as much as he can.
And who's being judged in those scenarios?
Both drivers. Both drivers are being judged by the judges, and they trying to outdrive one another. So you're comparing one piece of art versus another in that time frame. And that's what's so nice about it. And we have what's known, if the judges can't decide, if the run was so close and so amazing, we have what's really become an integral part of drifting, because everyone wants it. We hear the crowds chanting it. It's called One More Time, an OMT. So if it's just so close, the judges can go, one more time, please, guys. Go back to the line and show us who's the definitive winner.
Oh, wow.
And that, for me, is really what epitomizes drifting, is that, you know, it can be that good and that amazing that, you know what? Go back and show us again.
The showmanship of it, that, you it's know, we need to see that again. Yeah. It's watching it live once isn't enough. I need to actually watch that again.
I suppose it's almost the same as the Red Bull Air Games versus aerobatics. Aerobatics is about style and about personal kind of art, whereas Red Bull Air Race is more about kind of getting through those pylons with the criteria, you know. But there's Is there two kinds of drifting? There's slow speed drifting and there's high speed drifting, or are they one and the same?
Yeah, I think drifting's drifting. I think you can do it at either speed, you know. You can do it at a low speed. We do exhibitions, demonstrations.
Yeah.
We give people the opportunity to jump into our cars. That's really in a first, second gear scenario. You're not really picking up too much speed. But when it comes to competitive drifting, we're looking for speed. It's actually one of the criteria which qualifies you higher than someone else, is how fast you attack the course but still maintain your angle, the line the judges have set out for you, and how close you get to the different clipping points along the way.
So what sort of speeds are we looking at here? An average drift Yes. You know, in an average drift run, would it be? Or what sort of speeds are we looking
at? I think, Chad, our opening event of the season at Red Star Raceway, the guys were entering at about 130. We are looking forward to get down to Killarney because I believe the entry speeds before you pull your handbrake and get sideways are about 140, 145, 150, pushing 150. Oh, wow. So that's going to be a real fast entry and, you know, something I think the spectators are going to fall over for.
Now, I mean, 140 doesn't sound like particularly fast. I mean, we've all done 140 kilometers an hour.
140 sideways.
Sideways, I think.
Pull the handbrake at 100.
Losing control of the vehicle. Well, losing control, and I use that term loosely, you know, deliberately upsetting the balance of a car at that speed, you know, things happen exponentially.
Correct, and very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it is, if you get onto a highway and you drive at 100 k's an hour and you pull the handbrake, you're going to know what's up. You know, if you're going 140 and pulling a handbrake and then maintaining drift and getting sideways and blowing smoke out the rear end of the car by burning your tires on the tarmac, I think that's a different story completely. It does require a skill. But like we say to the people we tutor in drifting, it's a skill you learn over time. Mm. It's like skateboarding. Anyone can teach you to jump onto a skateboard, push a skateboard down the road. But over time, you learn to upskill yourself on that skateboard. Yeah. So you learn balance. You learn how to do the different tricks associated with skateboarding. And then eventually you're on a vert ramp doing your...
And you develop your own style, which is kind of what you see with most drivers in drifting. They develop their own type of drift style. And again, that, you know, that's what makes it so pleasant to watch, is you can have one guy that is fast and furious and comes in hauling with 600, 700, 800 horsepower, but there's a guy with 200 horsepower keeping up with him. So it really becomes quite exciting. You don't need this big, massive machine to take part in the sport. You can come with a fairly lower horsepower car and outdrive the person.
So there are no classes per se, like a 3-liter class or a 2-liter class or anything of the sort in drifting?
No, I think that would complicate things.
It's basically just run what you brung. If you pitch up there with a million horsepower rear-wheel drive car, you're good to go. You know, if you come in there with 150 horsepower rear-wheel drive car, you're competing up against it.
Look, Chad, in saying that, we do have safety criteria, and we've got a rules and regulation pack, so you can bring any rear-wheel drive car as long as it meets those safety criteria.
So you've got, you've got the drift series that you guys are kind of leading and organizing, and then you've also got the drift school.
Yes.
How does your drift school work? And are you seeing more and more people wanting to learn to drift, or what is the scenario with your drift school?
It's taken us by a bit of a storm. We felt that, and we realized in order to grow the sport, we obviously need to have some type of growth from the bottom up. You know, a lot of the guys that do start competing in drifting have been the ex-competitors on circuit racing or rally or whatever the case may be. But we've got a couple of competitors that, come from the ranks where we've taught them, like us. We came from, saw it in the States, bought two cars, asked a couple of guys, trained up and became...
So who taught you, just out of interest? Or is that kind
it
of
was,
like
it was an amalgamation of about six different
we
people.
Had 12 tutors. After you punched the radio and the windscreen out, you know the frustration of learning to drift. That you either have it or you don't. And then when you get it, you think, how did it take me so long to get it? And it's a feeling.
Yeah.
Now, how do you teach someone a feeling? Time and chance, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So your school, I mean, how many people do you teach on?
We normally have a drift course. We now do our drift courses out at Red Star Raceway. And
is that the same one you guys taught me on?
No, we taught you at Brakpan.
Brakpan. Okay.
But this is a little further east. It's a nice little setup, beautiful skid pan. And we have two 350Zs that are still stock, but we've gutted them. We've pretty much made them a drift-ready car. So we've put in good suspension. We've got a hydraulic handbrake to teach you how to lock the back wheels up with a handbrake. The diffs are locked. So it's basically a drift spec car. We've gutted it, made it lighter, and it looks the part. So when you get in the car, you know this is a drift car. We've disconnected the ABS and the traction control and everything. And the bad thing about that is when you get it wrong, it's your fault.
You're left to your own devices.
It's you that's getting it wrong, not the ABS that suddenly kicked in and put you out. If you're getting it wrong, it's your fault. If you get it right, however, it's also your fault. So it really is man and machine. And we normally put about 6 to 8 people in a course, in 2 or 3 cars, and we do it at the skid pan. I come from a background where we would do advanced driving courses, and the difference that we have with the advanced driving courses is A, we're more fun, but B is...
It is more fun. I've done it, and it is more fun.
Yeah, and but C, we are more fun.
But,
D, all of the above.
Yeah, D, all of the above. But the main thing that, for example, an advanced driving course will do is they'll teach you how to correct. They'll get you on a skid pan and say, oh, look at how this traction control kicks in. And it's great. The traction control does kick in, but it doesn't tell you how to control the situation. Yeah. It teaches you how to...
Your safety in the hands of the vehicle correct. And the vehicle's aids.
It teaches you how to correct the problem. We'll teach you, it's way more fun to control it. And you control that car. You control the slide. You control everything that's happening in that car. And you get more track, more seat time. We don't like sitting in a room doing theory. We want you, and we said earlier, it's all about feeling and the relationship you have with your car. Most people have a great relationship with their car. We just try and foster that.
So the cost of learning how to drift and the cost of getting into the sport. Yeah. I mean, a couple of shows ago, probably 8-10 shows ago, we had this debate about how expensive it is to get into motorsport.
Yeah.
How expensive it is to get into track sport. Is it the same for drifting?
Yeah, it's about George 11,000 and 60,000. Look, I think at the end of the day, if you've ever competed or been involved in karting or any of the above motorsports, drifting is kind of medium level motorsport. To learn to drift, our school is entry level. Coming there for the first time, you'd pay 7,000 rand. You get 4 or 5 hours behind the steering wheel, and we'd get you to a point where you can jump into your own car and advance that skill that we've taught you. Obviously, different people advance quicker than other people. It just depends, you know. A lot of ladies pick it up a lot quicker than men, funny enough. I think men are just like speed freaks and
I don't want to get the man woman discussion going here, because Rosemary's not yet to defend herself. Yeah. But you know, it might be a control thing.
It possibly is, and I think the guys that have come onto the course have benefited hugely from it by means of just, you know, being better drivers on the road.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes would you teach you to control the uncontrollable skid. And that's the benefit of it, really, in terms of normal day driving.
We want to stop you having skid marks in your pants rather than leave skid marks on the road.
On the road. Now, I wanted to ask quick, I mean, but just back to the Super Drift series as such, how well supported is the series itself in terms of competitors? Mikey, you're sitting there saying that, you know, it's not the cheapest form of motorsport,
yes,
but it sort of comes in about midway. So we know that disposable income in South Africa is a bit of a rare commodity. So how many competitors do we get in an event, or how many drifters are there in South Africa?
So I can say at a national event we're looking at 40-45 drifters, although those numbers dwindle towards the end of the season because budget runs out.
Okay.
Guys aren't performing like they wanted to.
Many other variables, but essentially it's a relatively fair price motorsport to get into. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at the number of competitors with the regional and national series happening all at the same time, we run about 120 people competing in drifting. And I'd say there are other associations and other competitions happening at the same time. So I think that's a fair number of motorsports enthusiasts
you must remember,
getting involved.
Compare
in
it to another category in motorsport. Compare it to nationals on bikes. Bikes have 80, 90 people on the start line, but there are 12 categories.
We're a single category
with 40 to 45 entries. So if you had to look at it like that, it'd be one of the biggest entry-wise, one of the biggest motorsports in South Africa.
Wow.
Now, if a person's listening in and they like the idea of this, or they've seen some YouTube videos, they've seen some TV around it,
or watch Tokyo Drift.
What are the steps to follow for them to be able to enjoy the sport?
In terms of competing or following it as a fan?
I would say competing. You know, they want to get their hands dirty. What steps do they need to follow? What's the procedure to get behind the wheel and to end up having fun?
Steal your mom's car a lot. Make sure it's rear-wheel drive.
Exactly.
The best drift car is always a rental car, first off.
Do you get rear-wheel drive rental cars?
No, that's
probably not. They're probably onto you.
You can think of a few.
No, I think the first part of that, to answer that question, Chad, is to get yourself either to a drift course and get a feel for it, if it's for you or not for you. The second part is, once you've attended a drift course or you have some likeliness of know-how to drift, then get a rear-wheel drive car and progress into competitive drifting, etc., etc.
So but nobody's out there with rear-wheel drive cars looking for drivers, are they?
No.
Okay, so you pretty much need your own vehicle and you need to start it out on your own pocket.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest way to do it. I mean, overseas they rent out rear-wheel drive vehicles for people to learn and grow and evolve and compete and that type of thing. But in South Africa, it's kind of infantile in its, where it's at in terms of competition. We're only 5 years old. So, yeah, I think that's the best way to do it.
So once you've got a car, and, that's probably the biggest cost. You've got a car, you've got to modify it.
Yes.
What are the modifications people have to do to their cars?
So some of the starting modifications would be things like getting your diff locked or installing a limited slip diff, in the back part of your car. Things like making horsepower, so you can do stage one, stage two conversions on the standard motors and just build some horsepower. It obviously aids you. It's not essential when you start, but it will aid your drifting, essentially. Yeah.
And so some modifications, and then, I mean, that's the bulk of the cost. What does it cost to run the car, specifically tires? I mean, you guys must go through tires
So once you've spent 300...
Skid marks on them.
So once you've spent 300-400K on modifying your rear-wheel drive car, then save up for a lot of rubber, and it's really about burning your tires at the end of the day and enjoying that part of it.
Now, a driver that does fairly well in one of the Super Drift events, on average, let's just say, how many sets is he going to use in one round?
So an average driver, not our top driver.
No, not our top driver. Let's say somebody that's finishing,
so
making a way.
Let's talk about you, Jim. In
what a job.
Let's
just take me as an example. At Red Star Raceway, which is a Friday afternoon practice, a couple of practice runs, Saturday afternoon practice, qualifying on Saturday midday, and then going through into the top eight. Where did you come again, Mark? Anyway.
I was not judging.
So I went through eight sets. Now, remember, that's two tires for us. That's the two back tires. So I went through...
16 tires. I went through
10 tires.
10 tires, so 5 sets.
Is it necessary to be buying, the most expensive tires, or does it matter?
Not at all. In fact, when you do start, I mean, we have to just quantify this now. When you do start, you start getting the second-hand tires. You inflate them to 5 bar. You can enjoy the entire afternoon drifting on that set in an entry-level car. Where Mike's going and saying where you're going to start spending to compete in the Super Drift, which is, and I've got to point out to you, not a regional, it's a national championships. Mm. Yes, you're going to start spending some money on the rubber.
Yeah.
But then you've already created a car that is competitive, high horsepower, got great angles, got an angle kit, it's got a lock diff, it's got a roll cage. So you've spent on the accessories. But to start, get yourself a rear-wheel drive car, lock the back diff, put in a decent handbrake that locks the wheels. You don't even need a hydraulic handbrake. Just tighten up that handbrake. And Bob's your uncle.
Have some fun.
Because uncle, you can go and have some fun and literally start drifting. When you want to compete in a national, throw in a roll cage. So you can evolve to get to that national. You don't need to say, I need to spend the roll cage and I need to pay for this and pay for that. You can start off with a stock rear-wheel drive car, lock the diff, put a decent handbrake in, and go sideways. When you start getting better, put in some good suspension. You want to now compete in the regional, put in a roll cage. And so you can evolve. And that's the beauty about it. It's not something where we're saying, if you want to come circuit racing in one of the sprint cups in South Africa, you have to have that. You can start off and start enjoying drifting from...
And it is based on road-going cars and road-going chassis. These aren't purpose-built space-frame cars that you need to go out and buy to compete in.
And the same goes for tyres. the tires, in order for you to be competitive, the tires you use have to be E-type or DOT approved tires. They have to be over the counter.
They have to be tires.
Street tires. So we're not using semi slicks or slicks. We're saying to you, hey, go get some decent tires and come and drive.
So, I mean, that can still run. I mean, 10 tyres there. I mean, without a sponsor, that can still run you a good couple, because you're not running small sizes here. You're running fairly wide, fairly large diameter tyre.
That's
at a national. Yeah,
that's at a national. That's me competing, wanting to be a national champion and competing.
And not everybody's going to want to do that.
Not everyone's going to want to do that. And we have this.
Not everyone's going to be able to.
Not everyone has the ability to. But, you know, that's where I am at. But, you know, I think back 2-3 years ago when I was enjoying my regional championships and going to, on the odd night to have a bit of fun, I was in a stock 350Z. I had locked the diff, had a good suspension and a hydraulic brake, and I was having an absolute jaw to the point that it bit me in the jugular, and I said, I want to compete.
Yeah.
And I started competing.
I suppose, I mean, for the average person out there, you know, just wanting to have some fun, not wanting to necessarily, I mean, not everybody's going to want to go and compete at that national level, but wanting to get into it, have some fun. It doesn't sound to me like it's as expensive as some of the bigger sports, or not bigger sports, should I say, different sports like track racing, superbikes.
We are definitely cheaper.
Yeah, to get into as a
and more fun
and more fun.
You're using the car. You're not just flattening the accelerator and trying to get faster around the corners. You're using the car and putting it all over the place.
So in terms of tires and that, do you have a preferred? Are you sponsored? Do you have a tire sponsor?
I am fortunate that my sponsor is a tire sponsor.
A tire sponsor.
My headline sponsor is Achilles Tires.
Okay.
And Mike is the also a tire ambassador for Achilles. So he's you sponsored Mike by
Rockford Fosgate. Sorry.
No problem.
Checking some tweets out, yeah.
Okay.
So Mike's with Rockford Fosgate, but his tire sponsor is Achilles. My title sponsor is Achilles, and I obviously get my tires from.
So there's no point in asking you which is your favourite tires, because I mean that's a bit of a paid question.
I'm exceptionally biased. Exceptionally biased to Achilles, but. You know, it's not that it's not like we haven't used many types of tires. We have used numerous amounts of tires in when we first started, and tire, it does become very important, the amount of grip that you have. So now we're becoming a bit more technical. So we say, hey, come and get a rear-wheel drive car, come and have a bit of fun with us, you know, and you can drive. But when you start competing on a national championship, horsepower is important. I'm going to say it's important to a degree. You need to learn how to manage that horsepower. It's great having 1,000 horses, but if you don't know how to use it, it's that old saying.
Yeah.
So
with great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly. So you've got to know how to use it. So you also need an angle kit. So the amount of steering angle that your tires and wheels can turn to, that gets increased. So you can almost get the 90-degree entry that you've seen overseas, and some of our guys are even doing here. You know, so now you're starting to get a bit competitive, to the point that you start saying, well, I now need to manage my tire pressure. On a faster track, I want the grip. I want to get the speed that the judges want to see. So I'm going to go to a very low pressure on my tires.
And that eats the tire, right?
It eats the tire, but it gives me the grip that I need. Whereas on a slower track, I don't really need I need the horsepower, but I don't need the tire pressure to give me the grip. I want the slide. I want to show some massive smoke and rather improve on my style. So I'm going to raise the pressure of the tires. So utilizing and playing with those little specifics, the suspension setups, you know, like any top level motorsport, you start getting a little bit more nitty gritty about how you set yourself up for win.
And just have fun.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick ad break, and when we come back, we're going to chat a little bit about our review for this week, which is, of course, the facelifted Hyundai Veloster Turbo, and then, of course, hijacking.
Turbo in a Hyundai?
Hyundai Veloster, yes.
Wow.
And then a bit of a strange trend that seems to be on the rise here, hijacking during test drives.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. Auto Trader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. Auto Trader New Car. The choice is yours.
And of course, we did say that our review is going to be on the Hyundai Veloster Turbo. So that has just been facelifted for 2016 now, and we are still in the beginning parts of 2016. And I tell you what, I actually quite enjoyed it. It's not receiving a lot of love out there, but I did quite enjoy it. It's something completely different. When you go out there, you've got a lot of these what I call cookie cutter hot hatches, and they all look very similar. So you got your Focus STs that look like Renault Meganes, that look like OPCs, that look like Sirocco's, you know, and to get something that actually looks a little different and unconventional, I believe that's a bit of a breath of fresh air. So the Hyundai Veloster Turbo is one of those, and it can play with those boys. It isn't quite running the 2-litre turbo motor. It's only running a 1.6-litre turbocharged motor. It is powering the front wheels. It's putting out 150 kilowatts and 265 newtons of torque. Now, it's been facelifted, so we've got a bigger grille up front. There's now 18-inch wheels.
What is with this Aston Martin grille that's appearing on every car on the planet?
I think you just mentioned it there. It's Aston Martin. You know, they came in there with what was a very unique design cue with this large, open, gaping mouth of it. And people sort of said, well, that looks nice, and it seems to be working for them, and we can emulate that.
Because it's not because of, you know, a radiator efficiency or aircon efficiency. I mean, it's just really a styling.
No, not really, because even BMW now, the new 7 Series, has a grille that closes off. So... Sorry, that's your microphone.
Thanks,
George.
Jay.
My bad. I was killing these two gents. I wanted to have a conversation here. The BMW 7 Series has a grille that actually closes off to improve aerodynamics.
So engines
and cooling systems are efficient enough. So I don't think it's about cooling.
It's more about styling.
I think it is completely styled.
So I was wrong. I said to you in the break that it's the one with a funny back, and it's not. It's not the one I was thinking about.
Well, this one does have quite a funny back. It is quite. I call it scalloped. So it's there's really. Cutaways around the lights and the rear hatch handle and around the window and that. And it really is aggressively styled, but nothing that's overly offensive either. Mm. What does make it weird is that the Veloster is actually a...
Sounds like a dinosaur name.
It does. Yeah, it's got that sort of Velociraptor, Veloster sort of thing. But Velocity, tied into the whole sporty side of
and
things.
Like fast.
Yeah, for fast. It's a three-door. So on the driver's side, there's one door. As you would get with a coupe. On the passenger side, there's two doors. There's a passenger door which is considerably shorter than the driver's side door, and then there's a shorter little suicide door.
Suicide door.
It opens up backwards, yeah. So it's proper what they call a suicide door. So it
yeah,
opens
but doesn't
up backwards.
You can only can you open that with the front door closed?
Actually, no. It's the other way around. My apologies. It's not a suicide door. The RX-8 was a suicide door at the rear. This one is actually just a full-size, a normal-size
normal
door
size
that
door.
Opens up the regular way. But yes, you can still get in there without having to open up the passenger door.
That's a nicely, it's a good-looking car. I mean, it's there's 103 of them on Autotrader if you want to go and have a look at what they look like. But it's a nice-looking car. But the front, it's gone a little bit further than the Ford. I mean,
in terms of that gaping
kind of Aston Martin look.
Yeah, this is now more in line with what you're seeing from the Audis now. Audis have got these very deep sort of upright grills. And we're reverting back. You go back and you think of the older vehicles that had headlights on the outside with this grill that ran straight up and down on the inside.
True. Remember the Mercedes-Benz?
Your Mercedes-Benzes. Let's go back earlier than that. Let's go back to like your 30s and your 40s and that. Your Dodgers and your Chryslers and that. They had these large upright grills, headlights on the outside. We're reverting back to
retro.
That. Yeah, very, very retro without even realizing it. So it's really not a bad drive. It doesn't have the same sort of poke that you're going to get out of a Golf GTI or an OPC or a Megane for that matter. But sadly, it knocks on their door when it comes to price because it costs 390,000 Rand 900. So it's just shy of 400,000 Rand. And if you want it in an auto, it's just over 400,000 Rand.
And I see. I mean, it's got the same sporty styling in the exhaust with the center
exit,
tubes. It actually looks quite nice in the back.
It's a good-looking vehicle. It certainly turns heads. It grabs attention. It is something that stands out. The interior is nicely modeled as well, but it carries a lot of those angular, butt-swooping sort of features that you see on the outside into the inside. But it sits nice and comfortably. The seats are super supportive. It really is a nice drive. The onboard onboard infotainment system, a little bit dated and a little fiddly to use in places, and it's not navigation ready. And when you're spending 400K on a car, you're sort of wanting it to come navigation ready or at least bundled with it.
And the turbo lag?
There is some, but it's a small capacity motor, so it's not that noticeable. It's only when you're really pushing on and you're doing a little bit of, let's say, almost short track work, and you're on and off the throttle very quickly that you notice it. The front end does have a tendency to understeer a little bit, the front end grip. There's no limited slip diff on it, so if you turn off your traction control and your stability control, it's going to start understeering, and then it's pretty much game over.
Yeah, that's surprising. I mean, it's not such a long car. I mean, it's not like it's got a long wheelbase, so understeering is surprising.
You're still trying to put 265 newtons just to the front
wheels. To the front wheels, yeah. I suppose.
And, I mean, that does make it a little tricky, yeah. And that also makes the back end a little lively. So it's it's an exciting car to drive. I'm not going to say one for inexperienced hands, but for an enthusiast, they could really enjoy a Hyundai Veloster.
Can't drift in it, though.
No, you can't. It's wrong wheel drive.
Wrong wheel drive. You can do it in reverse. but I see the leather seats are two-tone. I mean, is that a standard feature?
Yeah, that is on the Veloster Turbo, yeah. So, I mean, it's got a nicely trimmed interior, and the fit and finish is very good. Hyundai as a whole is just very good.
Hyundai's always been a good car. I think what was impressive, the first impressive car that I saw out of Hyundai was the Hyundai Getz.
Yes,
that car was impressive for a little car.
You know, I'm gonna go even further back. I'm gonna take they've had impressive vehicles. So you go with the J2 Elantra, you go with the Elantra of 95, 96 around there. That was, you know, not a bad vehicle. It actually, believe it or not, it used a Beta motor, the 2-liter version, which is based on the Mitsubishi Evo.
Oh.
Block. So, you know, there's some good engineering underneath there, and they were pretty solidly built. The good value for money. In terms of value for money now, though, it's a little bit of a question because I believe that Hyundai South Africa is just putting a little too much of a premium on their vehicles, and their vehicles are slightly overpriced for what you're getting. They're pitching it as a premium brand, and sadly it's not quite there yet, and it hasn't broken that stigma. What they are doing, though...
It's still a fully imported car.
Yep, still fully imported.
But being fully imported, I mean, I think Hyundai does a slightly better job at supporting the car, because
they do a much better job than what they were doing around the turn of the millennium in the late 90s, when there was an absolute nightmare with Hyundai. In fact, they pulled out of the country, you know, so it was quite a bit of a fiasco there. They have rectified that, but the damage there was done. And people are still that are old enough, they can afford these sort of vehicles, are still recalling that and saying, I'm not trusting them 100%, so I'm not going to drop 400k on a turbocharged.
I don't know. I mean, I think since the Hyundai Getz and a couple of other Hyundais, specifically their SUVs, they've come a long way.
They have come a long way. I mean, we've got the new Tucson that's launching, or actually has just launched recently, so
The iX35 has been hugely popular.
Now, the Tucson is the replacement for the iX35, and it's receiving good reviews. We had the Santa Fe on test as well, fantastic vehicle. It's just staunchly priced.
And which vehicle isn't, though? I mean, let's be honest.
For what you're getting, you know, if you're looking at that.
What would you compare as a better value for money car in this category?
It's a tough one, because in terms of just the vehicle itself, I would go with the Renault Megane Lux. The Renault Megane Lux. You're getting more power. You're getting 2-liter motor. It's just a little more grown up, a little more refined, but you're sitting with the same stigma and aftermarket backup and support, and the resale value of Renault, which Renault, unfortunately, as hard as they're trying, they haven't managed to shake just yet. Polo GTI is going to give you very similar sort of performance and vibe with a better resale. And I mean, I'm not an overly VW fan, but I can't deny that they've got a good product with a good backing and fantastic support.
I mean, German cars have their reputation
absolutely,
of being very popular
and reliable,
and reliable well and built, supported, yes. well built. But I think Hyundai's giving them a go. I mean, I really think Hyundai's giving them a go.
Now, the cherry on the cake here for me, and the reason why we can sit here and say, okay, well, that's staunch and pricey, but it almost makes us viable. Hyundai offers a drivetrain warranty of 7 years, 200,000 kilometers.
How many drivetrains break?
Drivetrain covers engine, gearbox, differentials.
But how many are breaking nowadays, do you think?
I don't think they're not something breaking. It's just additional peace of mind. Peace of mind that
it's like insurance.
Yeah, you could own this vehicle. Yeah. You could own this vehicle and drive this 150,000 kilometers, 5 years worth of driving, and it's still covered. The motor and the gearbox and that is still covered by the warranty. Its basic coverage is 5 years and 150,000 kilometers.
That's very impressive.
Which I mean is now wheel bearings and bodywork and panels and suspension components and that sort of stuff, warranty on that, down to the radio and the electronics and that, covered by 5 years and 150,000 kilometers. But that 7 year, 200,000 kilometer on the motor of a turbocharged hatch, that's something special. That's almost
Is the turbo covered?
No doubt it would be.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, does it form part of the drivetrain?
It should form part of the drivetrain in the engine. Yeah. You know, I'd have to go in and have to read right through it.
Yeah.
But when they're saying there that it's engine, you know, suspension, I believe suspension is covered with it, yes. Engine, suspension, gearbox is on the drivetrain side of things. I'm like, well, that's...
I mean, I'd be impressed if the turbo was covered. Because
it's a wearing part.
Often a turbo is the one thing to go.
Yeah.
When a car's pushed a little bit too hard.
So, I mean, I'd have to do a little more reading there. I haven't been through their warranty, you know, and checked all the I's and T's are dotted.
We'll tweet it after this.
But, we'll take a look at that. So that's the Hyundai Veloster Turbo, and we'll just move on to quickly. We did mention that we're going to say it, so just a little bit of a news item here. And authorities in Joburg are concerned after a spate of hijacking in the city CBD.
What's that about?
Well, I mean, it's actually happening in Durban, but, a trio of enterprising hijackers have started targeting car dealerships in Durban's southern areas.
Mm.
Three salesmen have been hijacked on test drives in the past 2 days. Granted, the story's a few days old, so within the last week. Police spokesman Mayor Zwane said on Wednesday that the first salesman took a vehicle to a prospective buyer in Isipingo on Monday. As the buyer did a test drive of the vehicle, the two were hijacked by two armed men. The terrified salesman was dropped off on the N2 freeway and the hijackers disappeared with the prospective buyer. So this is clearly an inside job here. I mean, it goes without saying.
Mm.
The very next day on Tuesday in Amanzim Toti, the same tactic was used on a car salesman, except that after the hijacking, the hijackers, along with the so-called buyer, got cold feet and fled on foot when they noticed a police van following in the Fulweni. Barely 3 hours later, a third salesman was hijacked after taking a vehicle to a prospective buyer in Isipingo. Again, during the drive, they were hijacked. Now, the quote here comes from Zwane and says, they drove him towards the Adams Mission where they dropped him off and fled with the vehicle. Zwane said that cases of hijacking had been opened at the Isipingo and Amanzim Toti police stations. He's also saying car dealers are advised to take extra precautions when dealing with their customers in terms of test driving, and they must be escorted by a security company. Come on! What is this country coming to?
That's just going to add extra cost to the dealerships. I think it's crazy. You know,
there's already red tape in that and involved with test driving a vehicle. You go back, let's go back 20 years or so and say, well, what did you need to do to test drive a vehicle?
Hmm.
Rock up.
Exactly.
That's pretty much it.
Now you've got to give your driver's license, which is fair enough.
Yeah. But, you know, follow this route, X, Y, and Z, and collateral, are you a prospective buyer? You know, if it's one of the higher end ones, we need to know, we're going to do your affordability.
Yeah, I mean, and nowadays, surely the dealership takes the driver's license of the individual before they allow someone to do a test drive. So then what are those driver's license fake?
Clearly must be. It wouldn't surprise me if they are.
You know, because
are they checking the authenticity?
Because I would encourage dealers to take the driver's license and check the authenticity before they take somebody out on a test drive. But that means salespeople are not going to want to take people on a test drive because they're too fearful.
The bureaucracy and the red tape wrap up that's in with that. So yeah, it is very sad.
It just shows that the ability of the hijackers to take regular drivers' cars are becoming more and more difficult. Because why would they be resorting to car dealerships?
I would say newer vehicles, lower mileage, they can basically select the vehicle almost in the color that they want.
Mm.
They're basically shopping for it.
Yeah.
So
sad. Absolutely sad.
Never underestimate the ingenuity of somebody when they want something that's not theirs. Now, I'm just going to revert back to you two gents as we get you back on the microphone. Just before we close, we've got 2 minutes or so. It's previously been known as Auto Africa and Joburg International Motor Show. We're hearing rumors that it may actually be making a return. You guys are an events and promotion company. Have you heard anything? Is there anything on the grapevine?
Can't tell you.
You can't? Is that a good con? Tell us.
Top secret. We've heard some ruptions in the industry that it's coming back as the SA Festival of Motoring.
Okay.
And it's about time that it moves from in the south of Joburg at Nasrec. It's not going to be going to what we're going to be terming soon the pinnacle of motoring, okay. And that's going to be at Kailami.
Wow.
They're looking at doing that in September.
Oh, right. Okay.
Early September. And we're still waiting for the bits and pieces, but from what we've seen, it is literally going to be like one of the big international motoring festivals, like you would see a Goodwood or a Geneva, you know.
But is this confirmed now, or is it still just largely planning and proposal phase?
Go check the website, safestivalofmotoring.com.
Oh, really?
Yes.
safestivalofmotoring.com.
I'm going to go check
okay.
it out.
It's out
there.
Okay, so
it is out there, yeah.
All right, so that's something to look forward to. Gents, we do want to thank you very much for joining us and for waffling on about the sport that we all love so much and the drifting and that. We wish you all the best. When's the next round?
Next round is on the 30th of April in Cape Town. And, yeah, we're looking for some big crowds there. We're looking forward to going back to Cape Town. You can already see on Facebook and Twitter the Cape Town guys going ballistic and wanting the competition they haven't had for a while. But I must be honest, being pretty surreal talking about drifting to you, Chad, when you know so much about it already.
I've had to sit and pretend that I don't know about it.
But so where can
for the
people,
benefit of our listeners,
where can people get hold of you? You know, if they want to get into drifting, if they want to come follow the sport, how can they get hold of you?
So superdriftseries.co.za or xsdrift.co.za.
Brilliant. Superdrift is, of course, S-U-P-A.
Correct.
S-U-P-A Drift.
Superdriftseries.co.za or XS.
Sorry, superdrift.co.za or xsdrift.co.za.
Okay. All right.
Just remember Superdrift, Google it, and you'll find
it. Because I'm sure you guys are out on the usual channels, Twitter and Facebook and the likes and that. You can go and follow what's happening there. That's a slightly more real-time approach to things.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you, George, for having us. Really appreciate it and talking about the passion.
Yeah, well, we'll see you guys. I will be joining you guys in Cape Town, it seems.
Yeah,
so,
it's gonna be good fun.
Looking forward to that. It's going to be great to get back down to Cape Town. It's been 2 years.
Do the listeners know of your involvement in
drifting? I don't think they do, but they're going to gather on now.
Okay, well, so, George, I'll tell you a little more about Chad. Chad is actually one of the stalwarts of drifting. Been around for years, and so it's been so difficult talking about drifting when he's the one that can answer most of the questions. He's actually one of our top judges, one of our head judges for Superdrift, and he's also one of our commentators, and he's been like that.
I know the commentating part. Yeah. I didn't realize the judging part.
And being involved, so
well
it's
done,
been lots of fun.
That's why we stole him.
there we go. Thank you very much. Now, with this inflated ego, I'm going to bid thee all adieu. I want to thank you very much for listening and downloading the podcast. Please do join in on the conversation on Twitter at AutoTraderSA. Use the hashtag AutoCentral. From myself, Chad Lukoff.
And at George Mini.
We want to say thank you and bye-bye.
AutoCentral, powered by AutoTrader on CliffCentral.com.
Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.